It actually makes me maybe want to give a talk on what we talked about earlier. Another time, maybe, maybe at Spirit Rock, one of these Wednesdays. So last week, I gave a Thanksgiving-related talk. And I talked about the cultivation of generosity and gratitude, of these very beautiful qualities. We looked at the nature of those qualities. We talked about a number of practices that would help us develop generosity and gratitude. And I think the majority of the people here wanted to take the last week to cultivate one of those. How many of you did that actually focused on that? That's great. So we can hear some reports. And it's one of the wonderful ways that we can practice. And I love connecting the talks and our time together with practices that we can take home and then compare. And my experience is that when we take a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks looking in a certain way, developing a certain quality, investigating in a certain way, in a way we make that practice our own. You know, and so please, if you want to keep going for another week, another 2 weeks with generosity or gratitude, please do that. I'm going to give another emphasis, another practice today that I'm going to invite you to see if you want to do that. To follow another practice for the next week. But if you really were inspired by generosity or gratitude and want to continue that, please do that. This beautiful quality of generosity, which is understood in the tradition, as it's sometimes said to be an adornment of our being. You know, that it's something which, it's a practice which we cultivate really in order to come to awakening, to really work with the tendencies to self-centeredness or selfishness or greed. And it's said to be this adornment of our being. Adornment of the mind is a phrase used in the text. And gratitude also, a very beautiful quality, that we can be grateful for so many things. And these are qualities to be developed. Again, gratitude is a training to be able to tune into what's positive. It doesn't at all deny the problems, the negative, and so forth. But for so many of us, myself included, my conditioning was to be very good at focusing on the problem, on the difficulty, on the negative. And that has its importance, obviously. And so for me, practices like gratitude have been amazing to really, it's really actually have the possibility of really tuning into that and appreciating that, which I think then can really help with our working with challenges or difficulties or problems and let us really be with them in a more balanced way. And there was that main way that the Buddha talked about gratitude. He said gratitude is a response to kindness. And we looked in our inquiry, we looked at various kinds of kindness, the kindness of others, and we could say even the kindness of the earth, the kindness of the beauty of the earth, the kindness of the gift of life, and so forth, that there can be gratitude in that way. And as we were exploring last time, there arose a groundswell of people wanting me to explore greed today. Let's not stay with generosity and gratitude for too long. I don't know whether it was the conditioning around emphasizing the negative that was just surfacing, but I actually prefer to think of it as a very sincerely motivated request. And so there was a strong request that I actually look at greed, and so this is my topic, and that I'm wanting to look at craving, greed, and grasping today, which sounds like a wicked triumvirate. think I learned that word in high school and probably haven't used it in like 6 years, but there it was. And so can also be a very crucial place to investigate. And I like to think that really the essence of our practice is doing two things. On the one hand, we develop beautiful qualities. We develop mindfulness, we develop generosity, we develop gratitude, wisdom, and mindfulness. And we develop qualities that are really the qualities of an awakened being. And having those qualities more in our lives helps us to be more awake. And then on the other hand, we also look more or less at what stands in the way of being awake. We look at our difficulties, our suffering, what is a problem. We look at how we get stuck. We look at when we're attached to views or attached to agendas or attached to things being a certain way. We study suffering. We study that which is in the way of awakening. I think it's helpful to see that there is this rhythm of practice where sometimes we're looking at the difficulties, and sometimes those are paramount, and sometimes we're primarily focusing on beautiful qualities. And of course, they're totally connected, because actually we can't really look at the difficulties and the suffering and the stuckness very well without having at least some degree of awakened quality. Without having some degree of clarity or mindfulness or wise intention or understanding. Otherwise, we would just be totally lost in the stuckness. And so, as it were, even to look at what is dark in that sense, in the sense of difficulty, is to have some light already there. Most of you know that traditionally, the root cause of suffering in the teaching of the Four Noble Truths by the Buddha is taken to be craving. The first noble truth is that there is suffering. And again, we're remembering suffering not as the presence of the unpleasant, simply, but as the reactivity to what's there. That is, I think, the definition of suffering, which makes sense. In other words, because the aim is to overcome suffering, and that's not the same thing as getting rid of unpleasant experiences. There are always going to be unpleasant experiences as long as we're human being, right? We have illness, we have difficult emotions, we have physical pain, and so forth. And so the teachings about the transformation of suffering, and I don't think it's always understood this way, but I think the core of it is really that we are looking for when we are reactive. We get reactive in two main ways. We crave and grasp on the one hand. We have reactivity that's connected ultimately with grasping. And we are reactive also in pushing away. You know, and so there are all sorts of forms that this reactivity takes. The grasping can look like greed, it can look like hanging on, it can look like identification with a view, it can look like attachment to a view, to the way things should be, the way this meeting should go, the way my life should go, and so forth. And that's a kind of grasping. And then the other kind, maybe it's more familiar with suffering, it's the pushing away of what we don't want. It's the suffering because there's physical pain, or because something's not going well, or because something happened and I started blaming myself or blaming others. That's probably more familiar suffering. But I think the key in all of this is that there's reactivity, that there's some kind of, we would say, some kind of almost compulsive resistance to the present moment. And I would define suffering like that. In that sense, we say that pain is a given, and suffering is optional. Very crucial. Yeah, and I remember I go to Kentucky every year to teach. I used to live in Kentucky. And I think my trip last year, when I went, a woman told me a story. She's a nurse who works in hospice. She said there was a woman who was a double amputee in hospice, and she had this sign at the foot of her bed that said, pain is a given, suffering is an option. Right? She was working with that in the last period of her life. Very difficult conditions, right? And so the first noble truth is that there is this suffering. We get stuck, we get lost. And it's taken that craving is the root cause of the suffering. Craving, and we would say grasping. You know, and it's not always a easily understood teaching, right? How is that suffering connected with craving and grasping? Well, if it's the way I've defined suffering, it's actually almost there in the definition, right? It's that suffering is some kind of resistance to the present moment that lets us not be with the present moment. And that it's some kind of dis-ease, unease with the present moment. And in itself, that's suffering because somehow we want something other than what's present. And so it's a not always for most people an initially obvious understanding of the root of suffering, right? Because it actually takes some subtlety to look at it. But then we can start to see, and one of the first practices I got, my first teacher was Joseph Goldstein, and he gave me a practice early on. He said, if there's suffering, see where there's grasping. And it was like a inquiry question. It's a great practice. You can take that one home, right? And so if I would be at a meeting and I was getting antsy about the meeting, I could look and say, is there something I'm grasping? Yeah, I'm grasping onto the meeting going this way. Or is there something if I have physical pain and I'm really suffering because of it? Is there something, is there a way I'm grasping? Yeah, or I'm grasping after it, you know, this pain not being here. And so it's actually something we can, when we inquire, we can actually see it more clearly. And so this quality of craving, which manifests in many ways as greed, is taken to be right at the center of the teachings. And the inquiry into craving and greed and grasping, I was connecting it some because generosity and gratitude can be there at Thanksgiving, but maybe it's a distant memory, but there also can be some craving and greed, mostly in the gustatory realm. Anyone experience craving and greed at Thanksgiving? A little bit. Okay, so.
Pumpkin pie.
What?
Pumpkin pie.
Pumpkin pie, yeah. Our Thanksgiving meal had three kinds of pie, I believe ice cream, and also a very delicious pastry. But I was very disciplined for a few seconds. So there's a second teaching, which actually is also very helpful for our practice, it's probably the clearest place where craving and grasping are talked about, which is the teaching of dependent origination, which is a more detailed unpacking of the roots of suffering. How many of you are familiar with that teaching? Yes, some of you. And it's essentially, I'm not going to go into the teaching in detail, and I have, you know, given talk series where I did, which are on Dharma Seed. Which I think I did about a year or two ago in the fall. And it was the teaching that was supposedly the fruit of the Buddha's awakening. It was his first understanding of the roots of suffering, which he, in a sense, simplified in the teaching of the Four Noble Truths. And I didn't finish the Four Noble Truths. The third truth is that peace and freedom are possible. In other words, that suffering is not a given in human nature, that we can actually be present and peaceful with the present moment, and this is actually our deeper nature. Our deeper nature is free of suffering. our deeper nature is one of peace, non-grasping, non-craving, contentedness. Buddhadasa, great Thai teacher, he used to say, contentedness is very, very close to nirvana. Just that simple contentedness of being present, being peaceful, and not wanting to push away. And of course that can be there sometimes when things are going well, but it's also possible when things aren't going so well. That's really the test, isn't it? Right? Can I have that peace and equanimity when things are rough? And it's a very interesting experience to sometimes have that when our practice may be stronger. And I recall, for me it was a very important experience when I was on a longer retreat. And I remember one morning, I woke up, I hadn't slept well, I was physically uncomfortable, I was irritable, and I was completely content. Another way of saying it is I was okay with the physical displeasure. Is that displeasure? And the irritability. And I was content even with that. And I think it was the bigger picture. I was content because I just loved the inquiry of practice. And in a sense, it didn't matter what was happening. And it wasn't dependent on feeling good or having pleasant thoughts or emotions. There was something bigger. There's something bigger there. And that's the direction. So I could taste that. Not that that stayed. But I think that's what it's pointing out, that there's something bigger that is a piece that can hold whatever happens. And that's really what this third noble truth is looking at, is that quality of peace. And that's what this, the inquiry into craving and greed and grasping is really an inquiry into what takes us away from our true nature, which is this quality of peace. What takes us away? What patterns do I have? How can I work with them? That's really what this is about. So in dependent origination, there's basically, it's the 12 links are divided into three, and I'm not going to go into detail, except at the middle. There's an initial set of factors which are about what I bring to experience. And that's where ignorance comes in. I bring a certain amount of ignorance to experience. I bring my human capacities and so forth. That's mostly what's in that first set. And then the third set is, what are the consequences of experience? Sort of what's the impact of grasping? And that's essentially to say that it leads to suffering. But the middle part is what's interesting for us and really can guide our practice. This is four links or four steps. The first is contact of our sense experience with an object. You know, and this is where I might, let's say I'm not being very conscious, it's Thanksgiving, and I look at the pumpkin pie. Okay? So there's contact. This is called contact. There's the sense organ notices something. And what's taken to happen very quickly, after this contact, there's a sense of what's called feeling tone. I think we're familiar with this. Feeling tone, the sense of pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. And so I notice the pumpkin pie, and let's assume I haven't had any pie yet. The feeling tone is going to be different on my third piece. So feeling tone is always subjective, not in the thing itself. But I'm looking at the pumpkin pie, maybe I smell a little bit, and there's a sense of pleasant, right? Pleasant arises. Okay? And up till now, according to the teachings, this is all what would be said karmically neutral, meaning it's just happening. You know? And then the next piece, if I'm not aware and not mindful, and if I have significant amount of ignorance as part of my background, I will start craving that pumpkin pie. There is a wanting. And part of what our inquiry is going to be in this work with craving and greed and grasping is to see where is there something that's more compulsive and where is there a wanting which might be more balanced and really isn't compulsive. You know, because I think there could be a wanting of pumpkin pie that's not really about craving. Oh, I would just like some pumpkin pie. Very innocent. Not about craving. I don't think that a deep happiness will necessarily come from eating the pumpkin pie. But, and so part of this is, in our inquiry, we're going to be saying, what really is craving? What is a wanting that is not so compulsive? What are the qualities of it? And I think last time I was talking some about the class that I co-led with Diana Winston, the class on greed management. Remember that class? I taught it quite some time ago, where we had very, very low enrollment for the greed management class. We actually, I think I mentioned, we had just had 5 people register. We had 2 teachers. And I think neither of us took that to be a problem because we were really interested in the topic. And so we explored. We really wanted to see what the nature of greed was. And I think I mentioned some last time that we found that when we were actually looking at ourselves and found greed, and maybe found, and I think greed is close to craving. It's not the same thing. But there were qualities of compulsivity, being compulsive with greed, qualities of self-centeredness, a sense of other people's needs don't matter. I think you're going to find that with a lot of craving. I want this. Other people's needs are not part of the picture. There's often a total obliviousness to consequences. It's just like I want, and I'm going to follow this. You know, and whether that's with food or whether that's with sometimes with sexuality or with material goods, all sorts of things. Getting, getting a promotion. We could have the craving around all sorts of things. But it's going to have those qualities, you know. Oblivious to consequences, other people's needs don't matter, only mine matter. That's what we found was characteristic of greed, and I think we'd find that close to craving. So part of the invitation of practice is really when you notice a moment of craving, ask, what's there? What's it look like? What's it feel like? Be interested. I think this is, for me, one of the glories of our practice, which is that we really actually get a lot of interest in looking into these basic aspects of human nature, which a lot of us have never looked at carefully. I had never looked at greed so carefully as in that class, you know, who are probably a lot of us in meditation look at our emotions as if for the first time. I remember having that thought, you know, I think I might have talked sometimes about having retreats where there was a lot of anger or self-judgment. Poor, beautiful state. And the quality of our practice, one of the factors of awakening, could be called interest, inquiry, investigation. And that's what I want to invite with craving, greed, and grasping. We're not, you know, I would say it's more to inquire, not to say, I will get rid of craving, greed, and grasping. Right? But it's more to inquire, what's this like? What are my top 5 ways that I crave? What are they? You know, what do they look like? What do they feel like? What triggers them? What are they for? You know, and to really have interest in this. And if you want to use another word, you can just say compulsive wanting. Craving or greed sounds a little strong, maybe. But I see heads shaking. Yes.
So, do you ever consider that? For me, I think with greed, there's a component of fear in there. There's not enough, there's not going to be mm-hmm. enough, it won't be there again. You know what I'm saying?
So there's a comment that the greed may often be linked with fear. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's really the inquiry. What's there? Is there fear? Is there anxiety? Is there not enough for me? Right? I think we see that a lot, right? We see that in situations of perceived scarcity, mm-hmm. right? That I have to get mine, right? And so there's really the question is to inquire, when is there craving? in the teaching of dependent origination, it's taken that when we're not aware and when there's some underlying ignorance in which we think that we can get happiness by craving and then grasping, and that this is really a way to be happy and gain satisfaction, when that is, when that's there to some extent, the craving will very quickly go to grasping. And yet we can really, we can intervene along a lot of these places. And so some of the practices to look at this can follow that teaching. For example, really, really notice when something is really pleasant or unpleasant. It's one of the ways we work with feeling tone. Because it would be somewhat predictable if we're not really carefully noticing, the strongly pleasant will lead to craving and then grasping, and the strongly unpleasant will lead to not wanting and pushing away. So really to notice that, and some of it's subtle, right? But to notice when something is not pleasant, and you can notice this in terms of, you know, with just being, with eating, with food. You can also notice this in terms of relationships. When something happens that's unpleasant between people, can I notice, oh, that was really unpleasant? Or do I immediately go to a reaction? Right? A lot of us would very quickly go to reactions. I have a friend who has this great teaching where when someone says something that's a little bit, that feels mean or a little nasty, she says, ouch. Which is acknowledging the unpleasant quality, and it helps her to just stay with the ouch and not go to the reaction. Right? And so we can practice with that. We can intervene there. We can study it. We can also, let's suppose there is craving, we can also intervene and ask myself, I can ask myself, I'm craving this. Do I really want to grasp? Do I really want to act? And I think the grasping can occur in the mind, it can also take an actual action. Grasping is a metaphor, means that we're actually doing something. But I think it can also be in the mind. I can grasp onto something and be fixated with it, right? I gotta have that, right? I have to have the new iPhone. And clearly, there's a lot of that in our society, right? So, let's see, there was a question of clarification, or?
Yeah. I wondered whether the group that you had in the greed workshop, that you had them doing a field trip with a walking meditation in Bed Bath and Beyond, and I wondered,
that's right.
I wondered whether there were any insights that.
I think I mentioned last time we did the final exam for our greed management class was doing 30-minute silent walking meditation in the newly opened Bed Bath and Beyond in El Cerrito. I think they couldn't tell that we were doing silent walking meditation. That's what did the security people think? We weren't doing it like a big group, like a line. It wasn't like that. Everyone was on his or her own doing silent walking meditation and just tracking what was there. Yeah, I think what a lot of us noticed, and I certainly noticed this, I hadn't been in any Bed Bath and Beyond at that point, was just the vast number of needs that I didn't know existed. As you go in, at least at that time, as one went in the Bed Bath and Beyond, there were 40 kinds of garbage cans right as you came in. And there were all sorts of things for sale that I had no knowledge of a need. But seeing the objects, I thought, well, why not? So that was an insight, and it was all, I think, of course, it was also an insight just to see how the mind can be triggered. I think, of course, we know this from advertising, right? We know this, that one can easily be triggered into craving, right? And the advertising industry, so to speak, is based on studying that carefully, that there can be triggers for craving. And we want to look at how are there triggers and how do I let myself be open to those influences, right? And it's even more subtle than that because I was talking last week to one of my students who does teaching on mindful eating and mindful nutrition, and she was talking about how recent science says that actually the craving that we have maybe for certain foods, especially foods that aren't so helpful, actually come to a large extent from what are called by some scientists bad bacteria. So some of you probably have heard these studies, right, where it's like 95% of what's there in our gut are bacteria. I think someone said 95% of our DNA is in the bacteria. And the bacteria, there are certain bacteria that are so-called bad bacteria that like things like sugar. And they're basically canvassing all the time. The bacteria are doing that. And so if we actually have certain habits, the bacteria are going to be saying, hey, a little bit of that, hey. Hey, hey, hey. But if we have good bacteria, and I think in some of these studies, good bacteria really like yogurt and fermented foods, right? And probably raw vegetables, you know. And they take us in a different direction. So interesting. A lot of a lot of what can trigger us can come from advertising, can come from even what's in our guts without our really saying. I mean, it brings the teaching of not self to another level. So in the teachings, there are the teachings of the Four Noble Truths of dependent origination, and there's the sense that a lot of the craving is there because we don't see clearly. And a lot of when we look to some of the deeper roots of craving, it's in what we were talking about earlier when I was talking about a kind of ignorance, that we don't see impermanence clearly. We don't see things changing. And somehow we think, I can have happiness from grasping on to impermanent things. And we don't somehow see that the deepest happiness is in touching that peace that can be with everything and that doesn't grasp. That's, of course, what the deeper teaching is, right? And that that's possible, and that that this deeper part of our being can have that happiness no matter what's there, ultimately, as we deepen. Let me finish up just in a moment, then I can get to the questions. So some of the practices that we do can also be just to really track impermanence. This is a very helpful practice for looking at craving and grasping. The teaching is that if we really saw impermanence deeply, and some of it's also a matter of concentration, that when our minds slow down and are guided by concepts, we don't see the rapidity of things changing. And sometimes in a meditative way, we see that impermanence and we just say, gosh, how things are changing so quickly. Why should I grasp? Right? And that's part of what comes from what we might call meditative wisdom. And we also can see how, with things changing, to try to hang on to that, it's going to lead to suffering, because things are always going to change. And so this deeper, our deeper practice tells us what the more fundamental sources are of happiness and of peace. And that it actually goes beyond even the sense of self. That the sense of peace and our deeper nature is ultimately beyond a sense of self, more connected with a sense of interdependence. And so a lot of the teachings about craving and grasping also, in their deeper emphases, ask us to look, how do I grasp onto my sense of self? This could also be part of our inquiry. And we see this more obviously when we're trying to make ourselves look good in a certain situation, right? We grasp on to self-image, let's say. I want to look good, or I want to look this way, and so forth. But the teaching really is to really look actually at any manifestation of self. So one beautiful practice that we sometimes can do just for a few minutes at a time is try to be with the flow of experience and look for whatever starts to grasp onto any aspect of that experience. Can we stay with the flow of impermanence? Sometimes said to be, can I stay with the flow of experience? Then I see, when do I grasp? And sometimes it's, oh, I really like that, or I like that experience, or I don't like that, Or, I'm a really good meditator, I'm really getting quiet. Right? Which is a kind of grasping, right? And one of the core practices that we do, which takes time to deepen, is to stay with the flow of experience and look for where there's fixation or grasping. That can be a practice which we do, I think initially we can do it maybe for a short amount of time, like 3 minutes or 5 minutes, and just set yourself up to notice. And then we can later bring it to longer periods. I mean, a lot of my retreats has been trying to stay with the flow of experience and being on the lookout for wherever there's any kind of grasping. It's a very basic way of deepening practice. And that's pointing towards, again, pointing towards this way that our deeper nature is one beyond craving, beyond greed, beyond grasping. And something we can rest in, but the practice is to find the different ways that we do grasp and somehow release them, somehow let go, and just open to experience. Again, we can do this in a number of different ways. We can do it when I'm with something that I don't like. Maybe in meditation, I don't like this unpleasant physical sensation. Can I just be with it? Not easy always. Can I just be with the pleasant without grasping? So all of these are practices that help us investigate this. Maybe I'll stop there. I had this whole other section I was going to bring in the social dimension. So maybe it can come up in the questions. I was going to bring in a section on how do we work with this larger dimension where some of the grasping is institutionalized. Right? It's like we know that we can't consume so much to really be sustainable, and yet it's still happening. It's in the system, right? There's a kind of grasping worked into the system. And that's a whole nother dimension that's also very challenging. Or I was thinking of at the first Rio conference, on climate change, 1992, the first President Bush said the American way of life is not negotiable. Remember that? Is that grasping? And there are ways that it's conscious, and there are ways that it's a very hard situation because the whole system is grasping, and who's responsible? Right? Who's responsible? It makes it very hard. So that's another form of grasping. You know, it's kind of related to our earlier discussion where the system is out of whack, and what do we do as individuals? It's not always so obvious, right? Not always so easy. But there's a way that greed and grasping are even there in some of our social systems, probably most obviously in some of our economics, I was reading a book called The Corporation. Some of you may know that book. There's a movie based on it, and actually the corporations are set up so that it's the duty of the employees to maximize profit. And the very way that the corporation is set up is that this is the only intention. You don't mitigate the maximization of profit because of moral concerns. That's not the way that corporations work. It goes back to Adam Smith. Remember, everyone pursues self-interest, and the invisible hand makes everything work out okay. It's the original sense of why capitalism is a good thing, right? But we know that there can be some grasping even in the very system. And so it's another level of depth and subtlety, and along with the way that we really want to inquire in these many, many ways into our own experience. And this is really what I'm inviting, this inquiry into our own experience, this other social dimension. Go there, maybe go there another time, or go there if you wish, but I think that's part of things. And I was going to talk about that, but not too much time. So I think what I want to really encourage is to look at how there's craving or grasping in one of those 10 kinds of practices I mentioned. Let that be a practice for the next week. I think it's tied to everything we've mentioned. And see if you can really inquire and see if there's sometimes a time you can just let be and let go and be with presence. That's really what, again, that's the ideal of where we're going with our practice. So let me stop there and see if there are any questions or comments. So big topic, it gets right to the heart of things, doesn't it? It's really right at the heart, it goes very, very deeply. If we follow this, it can take us very, very deeply. Yeah, please.
When I crave and grasp, were I to train myself to gasp, I could possibly have a crave, grasp, gasp cycle and catch myself doing it, taking a deep breath.
Yeah. Yeah, just I think if you can in some way intervene with the cycle, and if you can train yourself whenever there's craving developing to gasp rather than grasp.
And I have an acronym for greed. It's got right everything except development.
Yeah, yeah. And just put that on your refrigerator, so to speak. But yeah, I think what we're looking for are ways to intervene with the cycle. Right? And something that probably is going to work for you. To at the moment of craving the third piece of pumpkin pie. So that's great. Please, yeah.
Well, I was thinking about the social.
Oh, yeah.
I want everybody to be happy around me,
yeah.
Including grandkids. And,
yeah.
You know, no conflicts.
Yeah.
And that is definitely a way of craving.
Yeah.
That I want to look at more. But how do you let that go? Because it's something you don't want to be happening. You don't want to
yeah. Yeah, so there could be, I think in our relationships, it's a very great place to look for the craving and grasping, right? And a lot of it, again, is going to be unconscious or semi-conscious. Like yours is in consciousness, right? It's probably sometimes automatic.
Sometimes.
And sometimes clear, right? And so you can see, you can ask the question, am I somehow wanting, maybe in this social situation, everyone to have a good time? Or to be happy together, such that when certain things occur, I may try to suppress them, or have resistance, or suffer. Right? And to really look at that, and really it's partly a question, a lot of this is a question, what would my wisdom say is a more appropriate way of being with this situation? Right? What would be a more wise way of being with this that would not be grasping onto the family situation being a certain way. And that gets into complexities, doesn't it? Yeah. And so, yeah, I think we find in relationships often the grasping is sometimes subtle, sometimes gross, right? You know, I want this person to be a certain way. You know, we had an agreement when we got married that you would always be this way, right? And now, 15 years later, you're changing. Oh my gosh. Another form of grasping, right? What did you say?
Or you're not changing.
or I'm changing and you're not. Right. Yeah. Please, yeah.
I just want to make a comment. I have hope. I have an 18-year-old son who we were talking about this situation, the Ferguson and the New York situation. And he told me he was raised by two dads. And he said, this is the real civil rights movement, Dad. He said, you know, my kids will read about this in the history books. He said, when in our democracy is being tested, and I just want to give him a big hug.
Yeah.
I think it's true.
Yeah, beautiful. I mean, I think that's a very helpful way to look at all of this, is that it's an invitation to actually grow and to deal with a phenomenon that has not been fully dealt with, right? And that the residue, you know, it's one can see the residues of past suffering are still there, and they haven't been dealt with, and they can be dealt with, right? Can be dealt with in multiple ways. They're not so popular. Can be dealt with economically, in terms of justice, in terms of all sorts of things, you know. And it's sad that. Also, at this time, there are a lot of tendencies actually going backward. So that's harder. But it is, I think, every... I think if we hold that sense of learning and growth possible, then it really we can frame this not as some problem, but as is said in the Tibetan Lojong teachings, turn all obstacles into the path of practice. Right? Isn't that great?
Yeah.
You know, turn all obstacles into the path of practice. And it's very clear that every difficulty is an invitation to actually come to greater maturity. That's a way to hold it. Yeah. Maybe time for one or two more, and we should go to the metta cards. Please.
Again, on Ferguson, until that happened, I was oblivious to the fact that the military has been donating equipment to police forces across the United States. And so some police forces actually have tanks in these little towns. And so there is wonderful, you know, awareness. Oh, it's good that I'm aware of what is. And then there's also this irresistible revulsion.
Yeah.
And that has such an... It's like Iraq, you know. My response to our invasion was to fast for 30 days while working, you know, and write letters.
Yeah.
Well, so this has... This awareness has, like, sock to the stomach power to it. I cannot help but have reactiveness to that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's big like that.
Yeah.
What do you do?
Yeah, yeah. You know, this is actually, could be a talk right after this, because the flip side of looking into craving and greed and grasping is to looking into ways that we're reactive towards what we take as negative, right? It's towards the pushing away. And so what to do? Study the dynamics of what that's like, of reactivity, where there's something you don't like, right? And a lot of the key for this is to study all these phenomena where it's workable, right? Like some of maybe looking at these larger social issues, it's for some of us it's hard for it to be workable, right? But you can work with craving for that third piece of apple pie, or pumpkin pie, or pecan pie. You can work with that, or you can work with the grasping onto something in a relational domain, right? That's real, right? You can really see that. And so I think a lot of the practice is to work with maybe reactivity, where you don't like something, where it's workable. Sometimes I use the model of a degree of difficulty scale from 0 to 10. What you're talking about is probably 10. So work with 3s and 4s and 5s and 6s. Then you really will study it. You'll know the dynamic well. And then you can bring it to something harder. So you, in a sense, you train at lower degrees of difficulty. And then you bring it to something really large or hard, whether it's personal or social, right? So that's part of it. And try to, when you're working with the smaller stuff, really connect it with your practice. So you see the teachings right there. We were doing that with craving, right? You could really see how this fits right into the teachings, right? And we could do the same thing with reactivity, with resistance to something that's happening, or not wanting something, or pushing it away, or feeling anger, or irritation, or despair, or fear. We could do that exactly the same way, and show how this is right at the center of our practice. Actually, I would say the center of our practice is working with and transforming reactivity of any sort. It's a very ambitious intention that we have. I think anyone who comes here is taking on that intention. I'm going to work with reactivity in my own mind and then maybe in the culture, and I'm going to transform reactivity into understanding, mindfulness, generosity, care, and compassion. And we're taking that on. And that's huge, right? And it's very ambitious, it's very beautiful, and I think it's right at the heart of what makes human life most amazing and beautiful and most inspiring, right? And yet it's a big thing, it's challenging. And so how do we do that, especially with some of the degree of difficulty tens? So I think we have to start by practicing a lot and looking at this at smaller levels, at levels which are not overwhelming, right? which are not too much. And that's going to be different for different people. And really work with it at a smaller level. Understand that this area where you're looking at it is a 10, and maybe I'll try to deal with it, but knowing that if I go into it, sometimes I'll feel despair or overwhelm or trauma or whatever. And just know that that's natural because it's a 10. And then work with the lower ones, really study it, and then start to understand, maybe at a distance, how would I bring that to the bigger ones, to the harder ones? Some will be personal challenges, some will be larger issues in the society. You know, and because I think that what the world needs, if we're going to talk about the social, is people who are really well trained at the smaller levels. And that's exactly what we're doing here. You know, then what we want is people who then don't just keep their own private happiness, right? But actually say, I've developed this and I want to bring this to others. And I want to bring it into my work and into the world, right? That's important too. Time for the metta cards.
For Carlos, a 27-year-old who just went into surgery for colon cancer, he's having a hard time with going through the now.
So it's just the one?
Just the one.
Just the one card, okay. So let's finish with, it's important to me to finish more or less on time. It's a Sunday night. Okay. So let's finish with a few things. First of all, if you felt energized or inspired to work with craving and grasping, in one of the ways mentioned, might be by looking at pleasant, particularly, could be unpleasant, but looking at pleasant and really noticing that, notice any tendencies to craving, or it could be being with craving and notice tendencies to grasping and not going there. Or it could be in our meditations really tracking any moment in which we grasp or fix on something. It could mean seeing what are my top five areas where there could be grasping, different parts of my life. It might mean looking at it in terms of different pleasant sense experiences, foods, objects, and so forth. Could be looking at grasping in terms of self-image, or how I want another person to be, or a situation to be. It could mean really tuning in to that quality of contentedness and peace when that's there, and staying with that quality of peace and noticing tendencies even there to grasp or to crave. Could be having that short meditation where we tune into impermanence and really track it carefully, noticing any tendencies to grasp, and just doing it first just for 2 or 3 minutes at a time. So see if one of those practices, or maybe another mentioned, or another that you have, appeals to you, and see if you want to take on for the next week working with this practice. And then we close with remembering metta, the quality of loving kindness. Knowing that we do this practice for ourselves, but also very much for others. We invite that sense of warmth and kindness. First noticing it in ourselves, maybe some inspiration, some energy, some sense of appreciation or gratitude. And knowing that there's suffering from craving and grasping in ourselves and in others, notice also the wish that there be freedom, that there be touching that peace. Notice that for yourself, and notice how you want that also for others. First, those with whom you're close in your life, how you want them also to be free. And how that can manifest as compassion and kindness. And feel that now moving into your heart, and moving out into this room, wishing well, wishing that we all come further in our own cultivation of peace and freedom. Feeling that wish in the room. And then let that energy, letting that energy go outward, beyond this building, out into the world, wishing well and wishing for that freedom and peace for all beings, without exception.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.